Josh, you did.
Oh, you just scalped me, man.
Well, it's better than stealing your vibrator and masturbating in your bed with it.
I don't know. Is that better?
Everybody, I'm Rod, and the projectile vomiting individual that's on the other end of this call.
No, that's
is Josh.
Me like dying. There's like, you know, the.
But usually they were all knocked out. But yes, we are
the Murder Moves Podcast,
part of the Slash and Cast Podcast Network. Josh,
Slash and Cast. There, you can use that soundbite. Use it.
Yep. Use it. Use it.
Use it.
We let's talk about us before we get into the uncomfortable talk that we're getting into here.
Hey, what?
how was your week, Josh?
You just said you were busy. Just busy. Just work. Work? What? Oh, yeah. Lots of new clients and lots of work. And yeah, feels good, man.
Man, work is good. I mean, it pays the bills. It means Josh doesn't have to like do a gigolo.
Miss a mortgage payment?
Yeah. Missing a mortgage payment is not preferential.
Nope. Don't like when that happens.
Nope. That means you're going to have a bad time.
Yep.
I feel you, man.
Kind of like this movie is. It's kind of a bad time.
So I am also busy. I'm like taking Friday off to get.
Yes,
like,
no, dude. Hey, wait. I was just going to say, man, Rod, I want to know, what are you up to this week? And what did you just do last week, Rod?
I badly played video games on the internet, and
I saw that. I came in and you were very bad at Resident Evil.
I was real terrible, and which culminated in a stream where I literally ran around for an hour looking for something, and it was in my box the whole time. So that was a real.
Hey, Rod, did you win yet?
Yeah, Rod, did you win? No, I did not win. I did not. I mean, I beat the game, but I didn't win while doing it.
Well, this movie isn't going to win any awards either. But hey, it still exists, and that is a thing.
I
don't actually remember now. I remember learning about the short film, The Stylist, and was like, that is such a cool premise for a movie. Like, it, because like everyone in my life growing up is a hairstylist. Like, yeah. Absolutely everyone. My mom, my aunt, my sister, my ex-fiance, my mother-in-law now, and like just everyone ever in my life has always been a hairstylist. So like for me, this was like the end all be all. I was like, this is a perfect like story to be made into a horror movie. So I started following Jill, the writer director, on like Twitter or something way back in the day. And she just is like this really cool chick who has a really good eye for horror, and like her I don't know, you know, like whenever someone posts something that is like horror-esque, it shows like they're like, I don't know, they're like horrorology or whatever you want to call it.
Their understanding of horror, yeah.
Yeah, but like everything that she appreciates going back, I'm like, man, that's my favorite movie. Oh, and you're doing The style. So I was just like all in fan of Jill. So like to see the end of this movie and she gets the best kill, and then the end of the movie, I feel like this movie was like all, hey, I'm gonna get like a really cool death, and then you're gonna wear the scalp at the wedding, holy shit, like that's the log line that everyone was like, yeah, make it, and then that was it, and then the rest of it was just really long scenes to get to that point, the really cool like weird ending of this movie that makes you feel fucking so I don't know, like that. Yeah. You said the word cringe, and like I guess that's what I don't know, man. Like it was.
It just
the execution wasn't as. There's good aspects to this movie for sure. The cinematography was really good. I always look for lighting in cinematography, and this had really good aspects of that in this movie. Really, I don't know, man. Like, again, it had the ingredients that I wanted to see, but just the execution for me again wasn't there. Like Willy's.
We're talking about the 2020 film, The Stylist, which I wanna throw some interesting numbers at you, Josh, and see if they surprise you. On Rotten Tomatoes, this movie is an 89% with critics and a 17% score with audiences. And
I didn't understand the motive behind anything that she was doing in any scene for any reason, like other than that she was kind of crazy. But like every scene just felt like it was 5 minutes longer than it actually had to be, because for four of the 5 minutes, the character, the main character who's in it for 95% of the movie, she's just doing something slower than she has to do it, I guess.
Yeah.
It just seems drawn out for almost no reason.
So it's funny because we, after I watched the movie, I went and I watched a video review of it.
I wanted to like it so bad.
I will say that this movie is, I kind of compared it to The Office, but with horror, like if The Office like kind of went horror kind of thing, for the fact that The Office always hits
the score was amazing, by the way. I loved everything they did with the score. That was really cool and well done. But, and I see like artistically kind of what she was trying to do and make it like artsy, but okay, I just completely cut you off.
No,
get to
good,
your
man.
Point now.
You're good. Well, so if you ever watch The Office, there are lots of scenes where mostly Steve Carell's character, Michael, is doing things that you're sitting there going, this guy is so completely socially inept that you're like, it makes you go, it just makes you cringe. And that's why the cringe. I didn't describe The Stylist as cringe. Like after a first watch, I said it was uncomfortable. I literally had to pause. I had to pause this movie 4 or 5 times in the last 30 minutes because it just escalates to a point that you're just like, and
yeah, like kind of what The Fanatic, like exactly how you feel watching The Fanatic.
Oh no.
Like character-wise, like the character does same like crazy shit with like, you're just like really stupid as well. Like when she's on the roof in the parking lot and she's just like, don't be like this on Saturday. I was like, just don't be like this.
I think that there is a really, really, really like powerful shell here, and I just think because I watched this couple of gay guys talking about this movie on their channel afterwards, and it was funny because they were shitting on all her hair jobs that she does in the movie. But like they made a comment, and I'm like, yeah, and I think it kind of goes with what you're saying already with this. It is a movie that is, it has this character motivation that isn't like, I feel like they were trying to be like, you know, mysterious and whatnot, and like
nothing was explained for any reason whatsoever though. Like it didn't make sense other than
I
don't know, that opening scalp, other than she's crazy, but that opening scalping, I feel like you got more of a backstory from that opening chick. Like, I hate that I said chick there. Opening
woman,
the graphic designer. Like, I know more about her than I do about more, I don't know. I felt like I wanted more than just following the main Claire around the entire time. I felt like no one got a backstory, and Claire didn't even get a backstory. So I felt like the only backstory I got pretty much was the graphic designer at the beginning who got scalped really well. And I loved the sound effects on that one. I don't know, man. Like when she is in the coffee shop and messes up and does the eye thing, that stuff was kind of cool. But like regard for being caught or there was nothing happening. I
mean, it's read the synopsis.
There's no circumstances.
Everyone in the synopsis so we can kind of get into we're talking about this movie and it's just it isn't super 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 deep, but just context into what we're talking about before we go and full on spoil this shit.
A lonely hairstylist becomes obsessed with the lives of her clients and descends into murderous madness. So I guess what's supposed to explain everything is the last thing the first character in or for her first client in the chair, the thing that she says that she grabs onto is we all want what we can't have. And then she's like, cool, I want your hair. Swink! And takes it and then looks in the mirror and says the exact same thing. So I guess that's the only explanation you need?
So I think that the whole movie is really, really premised around this woman who is... She says she doesn't have a father. She says her mother died. She was on alcohol when she died. So she says, I don't know if she drunk drove into a bridge or anything. She doesn't really go into details. And you get these things. And throughout the movie, there are these periodic, I think they're trying to tell you something, that there are memories or something she's holding on to, because she sits there and carries around her phone and, has these episodes of when she's breaking down. And I don't know if there's a phone call from her mother or a video that she's transferred the audio of her mother off. I assumed it was stuff from her mother that
traumatized her.
Yeah.
Completely.
And it's very,
it's not overly explained, which, hey, whatever. Yeah. I missed it completely. But tonight too, I had to pause it, go upstairs, put Dottie back down. Yeah. It's the break of watching a movie as a parent type thing. So
yeah.
I'm pretty sure I missed a few things. But I had such high hopes and was just I feel let down. Dang it.
So it's the movie has a pretty good length. It's an hour 40 something. And a lot of the beginning of the movie is very you're getting this pattern of what this woman's doing.
Yeah, it's repetitive. It's almost like Groundhog Day, where you're like, okay, you're getting the daily routine of this character almost what she's doing.
It's a serial killer routine, right? It's that, which is another interesting thing, because you don't often, women killers happen in movies, right? I mean, you go and look at Scream, 2 and 4, and I don't remember what happens in 3, but... you have female killers happen in a bunch of these movies, and even go back to Sleepaway Camp and what the female killer that is that if you see Sleepaway Camp you understand. Yep. But it's just the it's an interesting concept to have this woman who is. I feel like we have another movie where the main character is mentally ill, but no one ever diagnoses her and no one ever.
Well, because she has a good mask. She can put on, she's got a good look for the outside world. She can put her makeup on and get a nice dress on and look the part of a normal person and put her smile on. And it comes off every once in a while. So she's just I guess that scene where she's eating by herself, that's just it's a bowl of like nothing soup and like little crackers or whatever, and she's eating it like very like robotically and stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah,
there's little glimpses into how this character kind of works and stuff. She is scary as hell though.
It's the movie.
She's obsessive.
It's completely obsessive.
I
feel like this movie feels very, very, very inspired by Psycho. Like there's very like it's a instead of being like because it's this like socially awkward the character that comes off as very like meek and like not obtrusive like or like not like intimidating or anything like that, and then she just loses her goddamn mind. And the really the second half of this movie is just you have a character that is I think of things like the fat dude in the Hangover movies, what's his name, that guy who
Galifianakis.
Yeah, Galifianakis, who's just doing the worst shit, and you're just like cringing at it because he's like, he doesn't relate to how to deal with other human beings. This character's like that a lot, but instead of like drugging her friends to have fun with them, she scalps people and then wears their hats, their hair in the basement of her house. And
but what? Okay, so she's done with it, and that's why she like boarded it up, but and then she's not done with it and has to go back and unboards it.
I think it's a character who's trying to,
when the weddings are her kryptonite, and I feel that too because I've done like photography and stuff, and I even just got asked the other day like, oh, you should do weddings. I don't do weddings. I totally understand that because I'm like,
well,
100% that. No, I don't do weddings. Get away from me.
We don't want to spoil it, but this wedding doesn't go too well. The one wedding she does, and you can go, oh, I see why she didn't do weddings. But it's, I just think that like, there are so many pieces. Like I really, really like the first half of this movie, and then I really, really like the final ending in this movie.
Messed up. I felt like so many scenes just were dragging through the mud of time for no reason. And because it was a short, I feel like the stuff they elaborated on was cool and I like that, but the rest of it just felt like it was for length or something. I don't know, man.
It's so weird because I feel like it also shows this weird, like there's this weird analysis of marriage in this country because, I mean just marriage in general, but like because it's, you have this character who seems like her father left like when she was born because you don't really know because the character's not reliable in any conceivable way. And then you have this woman who's like sitting there and like about to get married and is like, nothing she says the whole time is like regret. Like it's nothing but like these weird like statements about marriage and how she thought she was going to be, but she's still getting married. And like, and it's just this weird, weird like analysis of, I also like, it's like there. I heard the two gay guys that watched this like review this movie were talking about the what's her name, Claire's like sexuality driving a lot of this thing, and maybe she's a. It's because it's the thing like where men like the whole serial killer thing, and they're killing prostitutes or women or whatever what they're doing. It's like the thing they're like. Desire, right? And so she's running around killing women, and is there like this repressed, like they're the Midwest, right? They're in Kansas City, like it's the complete Midwest Bible Belt kind of part of the country, and not that Kansas City is like
I feel giant. Like it's a little bit of both, like a magnifying glass. But then again, like, we're not being I don't know. Maybe I'm being too harsh on this now. The more we talk about it and explain it, like, I don't, like, that. Those scores are so ridiculously, like, lopsided and make zero sense, to be honest.
Well, it's so, like, we had issues, both of us, and you had harder issues. I go back to our first episode with Relic, and Relic has this weird tone of they're explaining what Alzheimer's does or dementia does to people and how it affects them with this weird, like, horror element of what it does to not only this old woman, but this, and it wasn't completely clear the first time, and, like, I think you had issues with just, like, clarity of the movie.
But I loved it overall because of its, like, its broad strokes with the artistic brush on purpose. This, I felt like it took some strokes with the artistic brush for sure, with the, like, with the audio choices and just, like, a few of the set pieces and stuff like that, like, were overly, like, oh, this is like a fantasy almost with the basement and everything, and she just gets away with whatever. But, like, I didn't feel like the strokes were, like, big enough for it to overly have that, like, artistic, you know?
Yeah,
for me,
I feel
to, like, not rely on a little bit more. Or maybe I just watched it too broken up or something. Who knows?
I feel like if they would have done something, and I feel like they could have just, if they would have had some breaking point for this character, Claire, and, like, if that thing she, they keep having her listen to this thing on her phone, and her phone is, like, her, like, she's this woman who is obviously an outsider, and she, that's how she looks into the real world. Like, you can hear at points, though, she's sitting there and stalking Olivia's character, right? Yeah, Olivia's character, who's the bride, on, like, Facebook, and but, like, you get very, very broken scenes after she does things, and she sit there holding her phone covered in blood in the bathtub, and you're, like, and crying, and you sit there and you go, well, what is this thing that is obviously broken this woman? Because, like, I took it as some memory of her mother, or her mother saying something to her, or something like that, that, like, set this woman off to the point where this woman is fucked from the get-go, but then, like, something happened and that just snapped her for her, right? And I think if you just give some kind of, like, you give audio of her mother saying something to her, or you give, like, something, and it just gives that little bit, it just pushes the, like, motivation, where the motivation isn't just this bitch is cray cray. It's just like, you go, well, she's crazy, but you see, like, this, you see reasoning, you see sympathy, because the this movie starts and she's already killed 3 or 4 people. And that, not spoiling anything, it's like, we talked about, like, very early on there's a kill, but, like, you figure out real early on this woman's killed multiple times and has routines and has all this stuff.
She, like Dexter, go, a lot like, yeah, she's got her, like, but why, though? That's what I want to know. But why?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
just
about.
Because, is it just because it's all, it was, like, a thing of opportunity? Like, the victims are her clients, so, like, they're the ones booking with her. She chooses whether or not that she gets, like, obsessed with them or not.
It's not all victims.
Yeah, I guess,
clients.
Like,
it's
to be honest, I think it has something more about the thing of opportunity, because, like, Jill, the director of the movie who gets killed towards the end, she just opens the door and is like, help me. Oh, okay, I'll grab my phone. And
oh, is that the director?
That's the director right there. Yeah.
Okay.
And Pepper, her dog, is Jill's dog too, the director's dog. So I, like, because I've been, but then the stylist, like, itself, like, the task that she's doing in the movie, it's just like, I'm watching this, I'm like, I've seen this. This is like, I've lived this life with, like, oh my goodness. So I was like, I see it a little differently, because those routines and everything is just like, that's a stylist. That's what they do on a daily basis. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's so much just the serial killers, like, that's just what the stylist does, right? So I don't know. Yeah. Like, I don't know, man.
I think you're kind of supposed to be like implying or like implying a lot of her motivations with what that first kill means. And we're literally talking about the very, very beginning of this movie. And so we're not like, the character has this like life that this woman is completely jealous of because she's got a family, she's got a husband, she travels, and all these things mean a lot to this woman. I think that's why she cracks. I think almost all the rest of the violence in this movie committed by this character is her teetering into the just completely lost it realm and trying to fucking maintain herself and trying to be a normal person and trying to gain friends and gain this society, and she can't do it.
I love that scene in the bathroom where she like, oh crap, they're coming in. She like hides and she's fucking crazy, and she's just like,
that's part of the second
home. Oh yeah, I'm gonna like so.
The second half of this movie, you're sitting there, and I'm literally at points going like this. I'm like covering my eyes because it's so uncomfortable to see this character just like doing this shit, and you're like, because not only, I mean, obviously,
but what is the size? I just go to the like obvious things of like, what is the size of the town? Where are the cops ever? And like, there should have been at least an introduction of one like FBI character, because there's way too many people fucking disappearing and dying for only a little like picture of like a missing person and like her. Like, have you seen this person? Like, just one little thing. There should have been more than that. I feel like that's kind of like
They're in Kansas City, and maybe that's the thing, right? Like, so you get these bigger.
I felt like metropolitan area.
Yeah, well, you get these bigger metropolitan areas, and like, there can be a real problem if you start killing people in like different like areas, right? Like, because if like different police departments are like responsible.
Oh, really?
And yeah, so it's like, so you can have like, in the United States, at least, like, you'll have, like, districts. Like, you ever watch the show Brooklyn Nine-Nine? It's Brooklyn Nine-Nine is a cop police precinct where they cover 3.5 square miles or something crazy. It's not that big. And so, but if something happens outside of that, it's maintained in that district. So you just think that maybe there's something happening where people are going missing. Yeah.
Is that how? So I'm just Canadian. I have no fucking clue, man.
So that's there's a thing. There's like, it's a law enforcement problem in America, because it's how it kind of works, because it's a bunch of the big dick swinging motherfuckers who want like all the, you know, credit and claim for themselves. So they often don't share shit like that either. So I think
That's how those shows make, like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So it's like, you sit there and go, I also don't think they find the bodies, which is a big part of all of it, right? It's like, so if they're not finding...
She just puts it in the garbage bin outside, like...
Yeah. The problem is...
It's very obvious.
I mean, it's obvious, but like, if they don't actually find the body, then missing persons... I don't know about everywhere, but in this country, missing persons are like, oh, cool. They went missing. Unless it's like, children get a little more attention, but like, unless you're high profile somewhere, like it means something to someone, you're often very, very like, you go missing, especially women in this country, and you're just like, cool, they're gone. And so it explains she can. Yeah. Well, I mean, So that's kind of,
I guess there's a lot less people in Canada. So
yeah, well, Kansas City's a decent sized city too. So it's like, you got people, and Kansas City is half in like Kansas and half in Missouri, right? So it's like
there's like more people in California than there is in all of Canada.
There's a lot of people in California, a lot, and most of them are in Los Angeles. But there's like a lot in places.
But that just
cities,
blows
like
my
San
mind.
Fran.
I guess that's why it's so different, like the standards of living and all the healthcare and all that. Yeah, that kind of makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. So there's like, it's just a lot with what happens and how it could be like getting away and like,
okay,
again,
yeah,
like,
no, because where I'm from, like all the people matter. Yeah. If someone goes missing, there's like, the city shuts down, man. And like, well, not,
well, that's,
you know, depending, but like, yeah.
I mean, you could tell because that's like the thing that's one of the things you're sitting there and you're getting the same effect of this woman going missing that like what would happen if her dog went missing because they're just someone's going around and doing flyers because you just kind of assume as an American, I kind of assume that they're sitting there going, yeah, they're like, okay, yeah, we'll look for her. And it's not really, you know, nobody's really looking for her. And you go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, and it's just, again, if what I'm curious about is how this woman obviously is like, there's one body disposal you see in the movie and you see them go, how the fuck did she get into a garbage can? Because like it's, you know, it's the thing is that when this, yeah, they probably, the body, by the time they actually started looking for that trash can had been taken out and never to be seen again. Right.
Well, so, that's what we have to assume because we never saw it again and it was never brought up again. So, but it just felt too clean and too like, like I just felt like there was no obstacles. And the only obstacle was just like,
was it her own craziness? Yeah.
Her own craziness and just like other women being kind of mean to her. And that was it. And like she got away with absolutely everything unscathed and just got to scalp as many people as she wanted.
Yeah, it's a man.
If you're getting a lot more like gore scenes, then I'm
yeah.
All for
there's
it.
it's funny because even the I was watching this movie and my wife came in when the first like scalping's happening and she's like, they don't make those kind of noises. It's like this weird, like it sounds like you took like like a plastic wrap. And I actually thought you'd be impressed with that. Like the sound effects in that scene are pretty good. And you like,
I liked that one.
Yeah.
But
they
I
don't
wanted
show.
More. I wanted a more, one more layer, but I love layered sounds, but
yeah.
I still like, that was my favorite one of the whole film was the first one. Cause it's satisfying. You just meet this character and then you find out she's a bitch and you're like, okay, off with her head.
and that's what's fucked up because like the rest of the woman at the beginning is this like flawed character that kind of deserves it but like not really, but then everyone after that is just was around this woman and fucking the second to last one is like that she just was. They don't really explain that one. That one seemed completely random when you're talking about the director. And you're like,
yeah,
but why her?
But how it all unfolded, too, and how quickly and how savagely.
Yeah.
It just, at that point, I was like, I was so disappointed because, like, I know who Jill is. And I was like, oh, yeah, Jill's here. I was like, what? Where are we going? I was confused because, like, I think I knew the people who made it too much. And I was like, why are we going to Jill's house now? Oh, because like they're friends and I've seen them like just hanging out and stuff. I'm like, they're not friends. Oh, right. They're not friends. Yeah. They're just, she doesn't know her. And I'm like, but that just happened. What? And then I was I'm disappointed again. Fuck.
I kind of assumed, and again, we won't talk about like the movie itself here much longer and then we'll spoil, but I kind of assumed because of earlier scenes in the movie, she had watched this woman at some point and had figured out where she lived, because this woman is Claire is a complete like stalker. She is a psychopath with the shit. She knows where people, when she wants to, she knows where people work. She knows where people live. She knows where,
but she knows how to follow well too.
Yeah. Oh, except the one scene where she's like wearing bright yellow and look like Big Bird, bitch. What are you fucking doing following people?
Well,
she's
wearing
got sunglasses.
Well, that's
on
her color. Like, that was her, like, go-to with everything, right?
my wife said that she's like, that's like a redhead thing. Like yellow is the like go-to color for like redheads like that.
Oh, is it? So oh, yeah. Well, it complimented good. Looked good.
Yeah. So that's what my wife had said. Cause there's a scene where she's trying on a bunch of like red clothes and purple clothes and all these other things and goes right back to these yellow dresses. She looked good in it. And I mean, the main actress is like gorgeous. Najera.
Oh yeah.
Townsend is, I mean, it's a fun
everyone
running
is gorgeous
fact.
In this movie. Come on, oh, yeah. Like that, like 100%. Like it, yeah. It definitely doesn't. Yeah, I don't know, man. I just feel like again, all the ingredients were there. I just wanted a tiny bit more because I still love this premise so fucking much, and I loved so many of the gore and the gags, and I like. You can tell there's a love for horror here, and I already know that anyways because I still admire the hell out of Jill and can't wait to see what she does next because if she's getting shorts made into full lengths now, I hope she gets more movies to be made into full lengths because this was it excites me, man. Like we are living in, I was having a conversation with my tattoo artist the other day about like women in filmmaking, and it's exciting because we're getting these stories that we I don't know if a male writer director would have made something about a stylist. I'm excited to see stuff like this because I told you it's been in my life. It has been my life my entire life, right? So I know this character so much, and I feel like I'm tied to this so much. But watching like the Golden Globes and stuff, and a female's gonna win this year 100%, which is awesome because there's a lot of wicked films made by women this year. But I hate how it's being brought up. Like it doesn't matter if who's made it. If you're a male, you're gonna get shunned at the same time as the and I hate the approach. It's like these three movies are amazing and these two made by men, fuck those movies, like how they're being brought up. I don't understand why they have to approach it like that. It's like we're never gonna be
it's the system, dude. And like you and I are both in our like mid-30s, and it's that thing where, dude, I've pretty much known it for a long time. It's like I'm never gonna complain about being a white male, right? But like all the white shitty, all the things white males especially have done, and then you could get into the broader sense of white, like males. But like, you start going, you can't complain about being a white male.
Did those guys? Wait, I don't know. They could all get canceled.
Dude,
who fucking knows?
look at it now. We're at the point where Joss Whedon, who's like the nerds had both of his balls in his mouth, their mouths for years. From Buffy to Firefly to like all the stuff that came, all the Marvel movies, and then this motherfucker is getting outed as being a like just a complete garbage human being, and it's that thing where you go, who is? And so I think that there's this unfair,
cancellation culture.
Because I hate that, but like, it's that weird thing where man, it goes. Shitty things have happened for a long time, and you go, and I think there's this like just frustration and like anger for all that, and is it fair that these people are getting, you know, is it fuck this guy because that's a guy, a white male doing this? No, but like I kind of understand it, but I don't agree with it. I just want to see good movies. I want to see good films.
Want fucking good movies. I don't care if you're white, yellow, purple, male, female. Like a fucking cow could make this movie. If you could teach a cow, like an actual cow to, you know, or a monkey or, you know, like an animal of some sort, like a dog to make a movie. Like I would watch the movie and be like, holy crap, a fucking dog. Like what was I just watching? Oh, Tom and Jerry. Wow. That cat is blind. That cat's playing the piano and he's blind. And then he takes the fucking glasses off.
I heard that.
It's not even blind. Fuck, give me my money back. It's like that, man. Like I don't care.
I heard that movie was a giant disaster, by the way.
Well,
a
whatever. My kids wanted
disaster.
To watch it.
Yeah, and yeah, I know.
That's what, you know, I'll watch any movie. I want it to be good. I always go into a movie, especially one where I'm following the people behind it and I am a fan of them personally.
Yeah.
I have high hopes, right?
Yeah.
And I still there's aspects of this movie that I did enjoy, and I just feel like I put too much on it because of everything I just
did. Well, I feel like this, and talking to you and listening to your explanations of it, I feel like the problem with this movie was taking a cool concept and expanding it from a 20-minute short to an hour and 40 minutes, because the best parts of this movie are the end and the first, like, third of the movie. And that middle part where it gets super uncomfortable and super, like, that cringe isn't the right word, but it's that uncomfortable feeling, and in people say cringe, and I sent you the Homer gif of him sinking into the bushes, because you sit there and I was covering my eyes, not because of gore, it's because the character's actions are so uncomfortable to watch that you're just like, It makes you embarrassed to be a human, kind of thing. And
without regard whatsoever for being caught. It's like she wanted to be caught too. Everything she did was like right in oh crap, and then and then she's like stupid again, like every time. It was like this closer and closer. Like, that was the tension in this movie, was the character, the curtain being pulled back, and Wizard of Oz being Wizard of Oz moment being.
And that's, again, I think we both said it felt like you just add a little more, you give a flashback, or you give something. I think if you have that audio on that phone that she's listening to, and you just explain.
Flashback
like,
to an actual person a scene. That what it happened we have a visual to it or something. It might,
or just
would have went a long way.
It just,
like,
if
I
you
just
did
needed
something
else. Just that. Yeah, it felt like it was missing. Yeah,
it's like even the simple things. Like, you go to Friday the 13th. Like, guess what? Jason is You go, what's his motivation? He drowned in this lake, or almost drowned, whatever. If he, that the whole Friday the 13th 1 to 2, and where Jason becomes a thing. But you have a motivation of a character that goes, well, these people were fucking, they were doing the fucking, and because of that, this kid drowned, and now that kid is a human walking zombie or whatever he is, and you go, and he's murdering people. You have his explanation. Freddy Krueger, you have an explanation. He was some kind of, he did bad things to children, and then their parents burned him alive. And so he's coming back to get revenge. It's, you have motivation, right? It's that thing where you go, Jigsaw. You go, Jigsaw. He's dying of cancer, and there's all these dumb motherfuckers around him that don't appreciate life. So he's going to make them appreciate life or die. You have that motivation, and there's this thing where you go, yeah, you have bits and pieces of the motivation, and I feel like I'm expanding on it and just kind of assuming things for why these things are happening in the middle of this
movie.
There
should have been a solid,
And
there should have been.
It's just me, that parts of that movie where I'm like, oh God, this is cringe, but like, or just uncomfortable, but like, yeah, there's this shell. And this thing that you go, man, it's like you almost hit a home run and it goes foul at the last second. You know, it's just like it was almost fair and a home run, but not quite. So I
feel that. Yeah, I feel that, man. I feel that completely. Yeah. I feel like we're on a very similar, if not same page.
I think I thought about, and you watched it way, like, I've been stewing this movie in my head a couple of days and thinking about it before tonight, and so it's like
you're not attached to this film in any way like I am.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
I
have and this is like the only movie that I've ever had this type of attachment to, where I've followed the filmmaker first and yeah. then saw their film. So this is like a yeah. unique experience for me because yeah. I feel like I almost know her personally type thing when I don't yeah. at all. Like
yeah.
I've only been like, oh, that's really cool. And like, I'm just like excited for her because I'm now, I don't know, like a fan and yeah. stuff. Right. So
yeah,
still a fan and I'm yeah, whatever.
It doesn't surprise me at all, the audience rating, and there aren't that many audience ratings on here on Rotten Tomatoes, right? But like, it's like fewer than 50 rankings. But this movie is very, very like, I feel like it's going to be divisive, and I think that I understand why the critics like it, and I just think that like, just little things that I think that could have made it that much better.
I don't think it deserves a 17%. Holy crap. That is
no.
That is just shitting on this movie. And this movie does not deserve to be shat on.
I bet you.
I don't feel like I shat on it. I feel like
I
shed a light into the movie's downfalls it had with me and whatever. I hate being hard on a movie, especially this is the first time again. Because like I told you last week or the week before, like I stopped reviewing movies on my YouTube channel because I was getting stuff sent with like people I knew in it and stuff. And I was like, this isn't good. And I don't want to like talk about
it. Yeah. I think you're sitting there going, it sucks saying anything bad about a movie when you admire the people that, you know, because you know what it's like, you know what it, how much 100%. Work and how much effort it is to put in a movie. And that's all you're saying. It's like, I think it came off with Willy's Wonderland a lot, where like you didn't hate Willy's Wonderland, but it frustrated you so much because you saw that potential. And it's the same kind of thing here where you're like, this doesn't suck. You're not saying it sucks, but you're like, man, you were so close. Like, it wasn't a bad movie, but like you hit that, like you just throwing a couple more things in there, like put some more seasoning.
The things that stand out in this movie are going to stand out for a long time, and that's good because, like, I don't know, to see visuals like that, like the one in the coffee shop, that's going to stay with me for a bit where she's like, oh, crap, and I'm like, and then the reaction of the characters and the interaction after, I'm like, oh, like that was like you feel really gross and like, oh no, for like the character in peril, like, oh my god, like it is such a fucked up, like this situation shouldn't be happening, like it shows like how just like there is no motive, I guess she's just crazy.
So if like what we're talking about interests you, if you don't mind watching things that are kind of like, I know a lot of people, my wife hates it. Like she'll never watch The Office because of that cringy, like that uncomfortable.
Oh yeah. It really goes there. Times 10.
Yeah. And I think that when we did like A Good Woman Is Hard to Find, that movie was anxiety the whole time because it was just that state of edge that you were on because of the circumstances of everything. Right. This movie was just, especially the last third of it is just, this uncomfortable situation just because situations because of this character.
It makes you want to tear your skin off.
Yeah. And you're just like, oh God, stop. I had to keep pausing it. And I covered my eyes at point, like, because I was so like, oh my God, this is just, but I truly enjoyed this movie, even for the rides that like the parts of the ride that were just like, this is imperfect, but
so
the
mental,
ending,
like super, super. Oh my God. Yeah.
So,
and the ending, too.
Yeah.
The little wink she gives to the girl.
Yeah. The ending is like, well, I'll talk about it in a little bit, but I called the ending.
I did too.
Super far out, but like, okay. So, go, if this talk is intrigued you and you're like, want to go support women in horror, because man, I'm all about a good female perspective because it's just different, man. You get variety. This is one of the things I love foreign horror because
Promising Young Woman a horror movie? Like that's gonna win awards this year for sure. That movie was fucking fantastic, by the way. Promising Young Woman.
I haven't watched it yet.
Dude, watch it, or we should do it on the show or whatever. I would love to. Because I consider that horror. If it's not, I'm gonna look it up.
I mean what is it called?
Promising Young Woman. It's definitely going to win awards this year.
Let's see what they classified on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm just curious.
Crime, drama, thriller. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, which is, we're doing Old Boy next week, so that will be another thriller that just has cringe, not cringe, but like that horror elements into it that will.
I just want you to watch Promising Young Woman anyways, and then tell me what you thought regardless, because I feel of 2020, or did that come out this year or last year? I feel like that is one movie that I think everyone should watch regardless.
Yeah. We'll do that in 2 weeks then. I'm good with it. We'll do that in 2 weeks. So yeah, if you're intrigued by this, we'll talk about it. Go watch it. I really think that there is a lot to like.
Oh yeah, it was like International Women's Day like yesterday or something, right?
Yep, it was. Or nice. 2 days ago when UK Burger King tweeted out women should be in the kitchen, and I'm like,
what?
Yes.
For real? Just like get controversy, or like is someone
something like
them?
That? Yeah, no.
Like that is the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm like, oh my god. Okay, let's spoil this a little bit. We don't have to go super in depth to a lot of this movie. I just kind of stick out about a lot of. Yeah, let's just spoil a lot of the things, and we could stick in and go on things that we enjoy. But this movie starts out with this hairstylist who is working in this little shop in Kansas City. And this woman comes in, and she's a real shitty person. She's like sitting there talking about how she's cheating on her husband and blah, blah, blah. And the thing that's weird about it, though, is like, did you notice this? She picks out she's going to kill this bitch like before you start warning she's a shitty person. Because she offers her a glass of wine and drugs the wine. That's how she does this, is she drugs people. Most of the time, not towards the end when she's breaking, but when she falls over and like drops her wine glass and passes out or whatever, kills her. They don't really explain it, but I think it just knocks him out. She grabs a pair of scissors and scalps her, takes her head, her hair. Don't explain what they do with the body or any of that shit. And then she takes the scalps and puts them in. She's got the cellar underneath her house.
It's like the Beauty and the Beast thing. Instead of it being like the rose, she's got like the nice mirror and the little mannequin heads where she leaves them all. Yeah. And it's like super well lit in that basement. Holy crap.
Yeah. She's got like a ring light and like other stuff that's like very like, yeah. And she's got like, what are there, like three or four at least that you could kind of see heads, like mannequin heads with scalps on them?
Well, because like, maybe she just really doesn't like being a redhead. I don't know.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to wear yellow every day, man.
I literally don't think that the hair color or anything has anything to do with it, because at points in the movie, like about midway through, you see her just like checking motherfuckers' heads out. And I think it's literally just her like that's how she escapes her own shitty life, is by like she puts on their head, their scalp, and goes, "Oh, I'm this person now." And like, I don't know, but and so at this point, after she does this and like scalps this woman and does all this, you start getting these text messages coming into her. A lot of the communication with outside of this character is held through text messages, because the movie primarily holds on Claire the whole
time. I don't know, like at points in the movie I liked that it was just a text message, because I felt like the psychology that goes behind, or not even psychology, but like the norms of like what's acceptable now for like text messaging and what you can and can't do, and like on purpose like not answering for a long time, or you know, like that type of stuff, and the anxiety it brings on to the other person and stuff. They really put a really awesome magnifying glass on that, in like zooming up to her head, and that like whole montage where it was like showing how much of a head case she was and how much this phone is really fucking her head up even more. And
because
the timeline,
it's her connection to the what if it is a like love interest and she doesn't know it or realize it, or even then it's just like a friend or a person, because this woman has no friends, like no friends at all. and you get that just from this alone, like how alone she is the entire time. And this woman wants her to do her hair because for her wedding, because her hairdresser fell out. And like, I feel like all the scenes that don't, that all the scenes that aren't with her are with Olivia, right? And like,
yeah, but no. At the beginning, I felt they opened up and showed Olivia at her job being important and circling that magazine and stuff and like showing that she's like a decision maker and that she's like really busy and important. And that's all they ever showed of her, like outside of any scene without Claire. And I'm like, oh, I really wish they like she's doing a wedding, like showing that she's busy or like, you know, with other characters. But I felt like the budget. I don't know. I just felt like there's budget constraints on this movie or something. And they really the choices that were made were potentially because of that or something.
It's also a weird thing where you're. It's not very often like you have to have when you have a movie where you're following a killer around, they have to have massive amounts of charisma and like just like that kind of thing where you're just like, oh man, it's like look at American Psycho where Christian Bale is just like a fucking crazy person, but like he's so like charismatic like during all of it that like you sit there and go, oh okay, like, and you kind of can't get behind it and you don't. And like that, this woman, it's not her, it's the character and how it was written. It's so like, she doesn't have charisma. She has that lack of it. And so it causes these issues where you're like, oh God. And so I think that's a big, like, it's a big issue with like, but how both you and I like interpret it. Cause you're like, oh no, because the character just is just, she's so hard to like root for. You can't root for her. I mean, she's a fucking psychopath, right? And like, and it's with, again, without that reasoning behind everything she does, you go, why, you know?
But that's what I was saying way too much in this, and that's what pissed me off was that I had to say that too much. Dude, I'm sending you a bunch of links for movies that randomly just came up underneath this because we're looking into indie horror. And I've never heard of any of these movies, and I'm very excited to check every single one of them out. A lot of them are foreign as well. And one of them has Olivia as the lead, and it's a horror movie, and it was made in 2020 as well, called Lucky. So, hey, we might even check out another movie with her in it. Who knows?
You basically, you get through text messages, this woman's going to do, Olivia's going to get her hair done by Claire for her wedding. So she goes over and cuts her, like, Olivia comes into her shop and you're like, oh, the murder scene. But she cuts her hair and it looks pretty good, right? Like, and like, but like the gay hairdresser,
she's not bad at her job. Yeah. Like, she is an actual stylist, and like she works at an actual salon, and she is going to that job and getting clients every single day. So like, she's good at like keeping up appearances, all like serial killers do. They have to be really good at like whatever happens, keep
she's
up
like
appearances.
She's like Ted Bundy as a clown.
But
so she cuts her hair and then she comes over to her house to like drink wine and she wants to show her the wedding dress. My wife's commented this and I kind of agreed after the wedding dress looked way too big on this woman. And you go, why?
It looked like a blanket.
You know why? Because that was the wedding dress was made to fit Claire, I think, is the ultimate problem.
Okay.
And you think about it and like now how things go and you go, that explains a lot. Because Claire's tall too. She looks like she's a taller lady.
But way taller than Olivia.
Yeah. And so they're drinking and at some point Claire steals her house key, but like her fiance comes home and like just kind of blows Olivia off and it
steals her scarf, her vibrator, her house key. Her...
She does that later. No, she steals her house key now though. And like the fiance is like, I don't know if he's like a dick or what and not, but like there's a whole thing where Olivia at some point when she's drunk at her bachelor at party, she's like, yeah, I feel like he doesn't see me. And it's like this whole thing. And it's she doesn't realize it because she doesn't know that Claire's a fucking psychopath. She's fueling whatever is going on in their head. And I think that's making a lot of this worse because...
Yeah, she's giving her exactly what she wants, and she doesn't even know she's giving her what she wants.
Yeah, the reasoning to do this, and because if she's falling in love with her or whatever, it's So like, she leaves when the because she like as soon as the husband or the fiance comes home, she's like she can't handle it, and you go because this woman can't handle her emotions, and she's. It's like jealousy because this guy, and if she's in love with her, it makes sense, right? She can't handle being around these two because she's in love with Olivia. But it goes into a point where she's been going to this coffee shop and gets her chai latte and gets the same thing every time. And
the motivation behind that one, I'm like, did she just know her order too well or something? Like,
that was
going on.
That I'm thoroughly convinced she is because she breaks down. Like, doesn't that happen right after she's over at that girl's house, at Olivia's house? Like,
right
after she leaves it. So I'm pretty sure, like, she fucking, because of what happened with this, with Olivia and her fiance, she just loses it and decides to kill this coffee lady. And she knows where this is.
Oh, because she got ignored and stuff. And she's like, I'm so mad.
She just loses it, man. She loses it. Whenever someone slights this woman, she goes fucking nuts. And this happens multiple times in this movie. And so she goes and gets this coffee shop to let her in. And the woman who knows her order, and she kills her. And it's really weird because it's this weird, like, she drugs her and she's trying to scalp her, and like she fucking zones out. Like, she's like fantasizing about Olivia. I don't know what the fuck
she was
doing.
Yeah, she was like looking at the backpack and like her wallet or book or something.
Yeah.
I don't know what. There was, I don't know, like the camera was on the bag and zooming up like it was supposed to mean something, but you missed that too. There's something that we both missed there then, I guess.
I think it was her zoning out to whatever was, and so she like stabs her in her face on accident, like cuts her eye and fucks her face up pretty fucking good. And this woman wakes up, and then she starts going Michael Myers on this bitch's face with a pair of scissors, and she's like, nah! And she's like, and you go, oh, you can tell though, because this whole scenario is she doesn't follow her routines and she isn't prepared. She's not set up. This is serial killers, and this character included, are very like systematic and they have their routines. This, she didn't have her head to put the fucking scalp on, right? And so like, I don't think she ended up doing any of this. She didn't scalp her because she fucked her face up, I think. Because her scalp wasn't down there,
right? She was, like, stabbing her in the eyes and shit, man. Like, it was gnarbar.
Yeah, it was
But when she wakes up and it was just like, Claire, like, why are you doing like, my God. Like, and
you're like,
that was vicious. And I felt for the barista, like, man, like, you're doing this shitty job. And you're there because some shitty teenager didn't fucking show up. Like, I felt so bad for hers.
And it's this escalation of like what this woman is like feeling and experiencing and how it's driving her over the edge, right? And so the movie ends up being at this point, it's like Olivia has a bachelorette party and she invites Claire, and Claire can't fucking handle it. Like, she goes in this club and she's like, I don't know how to deal and I don't know how to dance. And she ends up going into the bathroom to go to the bathroom, and her friends come in and are like just talking mad shit about Claire, just talking shit about her real bad. And so she loses it and leaves and follows the one girl home who's going home to get fucked real good, because she meets this dude on her porch after getting like a Uber to her house, and they fuck because Claire breaks into this house. Like this, she, the second half of this movie, you're just like, what is this woman doing? And she breaks in the house, is about to kill him, and then like, or kill her with her scissors out, and then sees some pictures of this woman with this old white lady. And like, I don't know if there's like this correlation with her own mother or her own family, because you don't know. Again, it's that you don't know inside of her head. It's you have to verbally hear things or whatever. You're not getting that internal monologue. And so she's going to leave, but like she ends up going to the bathroom and is like reading her prescriptions. And she hears this woman get up to go to the bathroom and hides behind a shower curtain right next to the toilet. And I mean, right next to the fucking toilet. There was about a pube hair length in between these two characters' faces, which was the shower curtain. And you're like, huh? And this girl's drunk and fucked up and like half awake, but like she like she's holding her pills for some goddamn reason. Like, I don't know if it's like getting to know her or what, but and in her other hand, she's holding scissors and just like slicing the shit out of her hand. Like you see blood coming out of her hand. And like when she runs out of the house, she like she's wrapped her hand up in something. You go, what the fuck? Like that was like that's the first time I think in this whole movie where you like this like she like lost it when she killed the barista, right? But like it was kind of similar to her routine. This one was a home invasion where she was about to just fucking stab
someone. Well,
that
was a revenge thing because she like that was the only time that I felt like she had like motive other than like you know the first person to go. It was like, oh well, you're shitty and you're there.
But she'd already drugged but she had already drugged her, so that was like
I know, but like that was our first introduction to the character, so it was like you're meeting her and her routine of what she's doing. So it's like, okay, this is the routine, right? But like that one made sense because she just got slighted in the bathroom and got called a crazy person. She's like, you want to see crazy? I'll fucking show you crazy.
You want to see what crazy? That her line was, "Yeah, don't let me invite my cake maker to my wedding." It's like, what the fuck? And like after this, it's like,
dude,
she gets
Brie Grant. That's Claire, right? Brie Grant.
Yeah. No, that's Olivia. Is Brie Grant
or Olivia? Yeah. She wrote and directed 12-Hour Shift that came out this year as well, or last year. So
nice.
They're
There's
all
a lot of prolific.
Connected.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I'm just like looking into it. I'm like, holy shit. Yeah. So like this is a really cool, like interconnected group of female filmmakers fucking killing it, obviously. So hey, that's cool. And to see the power in numbers, hey.
Yeah. Well, it's this is where you start getting those like montages of her of Claire sitting in bed like with her text messages and sending Olivia these weird text messages. And then she really loses it because she shows up to Olivia's work and is like waiting by her car. And she's like, how did you know where I work? She's like,
oh yeah, that reveal was like when you, I don't know, that uncomfortable feeling that you are trying to describe. Like that's when it, like my butt hurt. I was like, like, oh my God, why are you? Oh no, that is just, you don't do that time. Oh my God. Like I was like,
so it was tense. Like the scene before that, like with the going to the woman's house. But like, this is where you were like, this is a person who doesn't know how to interact with other human beings. And that's the part. And this is where you go, Olivia, you might've brought a bunch of this upon yourself, because she, instead of like telling her you're fucking crazy, never come near me again, she goes, you better not act like this on Saturday at her wedding. So you're going, okay, this woman is stalking you, and you go, you better not act like that. I don't think that's a stern enough, you know, in like interaction with this individual, because you want your hair to look good for your wedding, and boy did your hair look good for your wedding. But that's no, so
on somebody so, else.
Yep. So they she's like, okay. And this is where, like, I guess when it was she was having her rehearsal dinner, Claire breaks into her house. Not even breaks into her house. She uses the key that she stole when she was there to, like, you know, look at her with her dress and her hair. And she goes in, and this is where I was starting to cover my eyes because I'm like, oh, my God. She goes into Olivia's bedroom, puts on her nightgown, finds her vibrator, and starts masturbating with Olivia's vibrator on her bed. And you're like, what are you? What are you? And then Olivia comes home with her sister, who you was like the bachelorette party and everything like that, and like basically jumps out the second story window, like into like this like fire escape or whatever to get out. And you go, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And you're just like, oh, it's so uncomfortable. Why are you doing this? And this is like the part, like this part of the movie is not an easy watch. It really isn't. And you're sitting there going, man, this is, it's just like, oh. And we finally go and we get to the wedding, and the day of the wedding. And they set you up for a couple of creepy fucking things that they could have done. But like Olivia or Claire meets Charlie or whatever his name is, the fiance. And she's like, you're going to treat her right. Right. And you're going to, there's like, this guy is like, yeah. And you're like, but he's like kind of looking at her funny, but like, I mean, you care about her. So whatever. And she goes in and meets Olivia's mother and who seems sauced out of her mind, by the way. But, and she's sitting there and she does Olivia's hair and then does the little girl, the flower girl's hair, and is cute / horrifying at the same time. It reminds me of the scene from Con Air where the one dude, Steve Buscemi, is like having tea with the little girl, kind of like thing. Because she had done Olivia's hair, and then she's like, I want to look pretty like her. And so she does this little girl's hair, which is just she puts in hair clips or something, but whatever. And
but it's to be tense, like, oh, is she so crazy that she's going to cut the girls? Like, they lead it up like it could potentially happen, and that's really, you're trying to see.
And so they get to the point where this is, like, the last confrontation between Olivia and Claire, and, like, at some point, you're like, Olivia's just happy to be getting married, even though all the shit that's going through her head, like, anxiety and whatever. But, like, Claire grabs her hands and is like, she has this line, and you go, what the fuck? She goes, she starts, like, crying to Olivia, and she goes, and she's like, what's wrong? She's like, I don't even run. And you're like, because she had, Claire had told Olivia, like, you find out Olivia's a runner, right? At some point, she's running through the park, and Olivia's there dressed like a 1920s, like, brothel manager, like, in the middle of the park with these giant sunglasses to, like, hide and watch Olivia. You're like, oh, okay. And they cut to, like, the front of the church, and this is where I called what was going to happen. I was like, as soon as she said that and they cut, I'm like, oh, I know exactly what's going to happen. I'm like, she's going to do this, this, this. And so they go, and the little girl comes out and starts, like, you know, throwing flowers. And then Olivia walks down the aisle, and, you know, with this veil and everything like that. And she gets to the groom, and he pulls up her veil, and it is not Olivia. It is Claire wearing the wedding dress and wearing Olivia's scalp like she's been doing the entire movie. And then everyone loses their shit. And then a little bit after this, you hear someone screaming because they've obviously found Olivia's body. And I want to know, how did Claire do this and keep the wedding dress, like, not
so white?
White with no blood on it. You're like, what the fuck? And you see this, you have this weird, like once the veil comes up, you see Olivia, like, it's Claire seeing herself as Olivia, right? And so you see that, and, like, it's the only kind of, like, real glimpse into her, like, her physical manifestations of her delusions, right? And And then everyone runs off and to like whatever, and everyone's screaming and running out of the church, and it's just Clara sitting there as the perfect bride, and you go, oh, I see now why she doesn't do weddings. And man, that last scene is fucking fantastic. It is really, really, really good. Like the payoff for this movie, despite the issues you and I both had with it, the payoff is fucking fantastic, because you go, damn, man, they really, really, they set up the anxiety in that level, because like, I had assumed that's what she was going to do. She was going to scalp her and, you know, go down the aisle for her.
Yeah. But, like,
yeah.
Like when you start to get into the movie, it starts to become very apparent that that's what's going to happen at the end. And it's just like, okay, well, the payoff's good, but it was kind of apparent, like a little too early on for me, but hey, whatever. It's still a good payoff for a movie about a stylist.
I generally did like this movie as a whole lot. And
totally.
It's just, there's the things, like the pacing during, like, especially the second half is a little off. The character development is just, you just give a little more, tell why this woman is broken. Just like, give voice, like make the voice clips on your phone audible so the audience can actually hear what's setting you off. It's just little things. And you could have made it like, it would have been like, yes, it would have been just, it would have been so there. And they did a really good job with this movie, but I can understand why people fucking would be the 90% and 17%.
Totally was. The whole time I was watching this movie, I was like, wait, isn't that the actor from Contracted? And it totally was. Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Contracted.
No, I haven't. This was a fun watch, man, but it was like, again, there are parts of the middle of this movie where I'm just like, and the towards the end, I'm just like, pausing and covering my eyes and watching, because it's that social awkwardness stuff that just drives me. Because I feel like everyone has that thing where, like, if you ever did something so embarrassing that you would want to kill yourself, like that's the kind of thing. Like, it's so embarrassing, and you could see yourself doing something like that, and you going, or just like, you know, it's just putting yourself in the shoes, man. But I think that this is, you could have done way worse taking a short and extending it out to an hour, 40 something minutes than they did. Like, they did, the acting was pretty good in this movie. The cinematography, like you were saying, was pretty fucking dope. The when they choose to use violence is, they don't, like, the whole, like, you know, scalping thing is intense, but it's not like the violence. The violence is usually the, like, the couple kills they show, including her killing the director, which really didn't talk about at the end, because it was one of the snapping points towards the very end of the movie. But that I think she did after she got out of the house of what do you call her, Olivia? I don't know. The timing of everything, but it's a lot of crazy happening in, you know, a very extended amount of time. But yeah. So
I'm a fan.
Yeah, I am too. Josh, we are going up into episode 25, and I've talked about it a bunch of times, and you haven't seen it, so it's not as horror as most of the things we do, but we're going to dive into Old Boy. And I'm very excited for you to watch Old Boy, because if you want to talk about endings, Old Boy has one of my favorite endings of all time for throwing a what the fuck is going on here kind of thing. And so I'm excited to see.
I have not seen it, and I do not know what you're talking about. So
yeah, exactly. Well, you'll know. You'll figure it out real quickly. So, I mean, not real quickly, whatever, 2 hours and whatever it is. So, Old Boy, next week, everyone, there's your homework to Old Boy. If you've never seen Old Boy, and don't watch the American version with Josh Brolin, because, no.
I've heard that sucks.
That, it's with Thanos. It's with Thanos and the Scarlet Witch, too, which is the fucking funny part about that. Like,
what?
It's Elizabeth Olsen's the female lead in that movie, and Josh Brolin. So
it just missed the mark and did not understand what the original was trying to do or something.
I don't know. I refuse to watch it. Like, the last time I watched a remake of a foreign horror movie that I really was into was Let Me In, which is a remake of Let the Right
One
In.
Oh, yeah.
And
did I watch the remake? I think I did watch the remake. And again, it just, like, it didn't understand what the original was trying to do. Like, it did cinematography stuff. Like, it looked good, but then it just didn't understand what the original was doing.
So I refused to watch it. Spike Lee did that remake too, and Spike Lee's a really talented dude, but like, it's not. I refuse. Old Boy is a sacred movie in my heart, man. Old Boy is a movie that, like, I think lit a lot of my love of foreign, like, movies. Like,
I've heard this has been on my list, honestly, for, like, not even joking, 10 years. And it's just one of those ones. And I've even, like, oh, and then I almost put it on and realized it was the wrong one. And I was like, I'm not watching that. Josh Brolin, no, that's not the right one. And then, I don't know, man. Sometimes you just need a show like this to force you to just, like, oh, finally, like, bucket list some shit. And, like, movies are always something in my life that I need to make time for, because it is, like, it's like a weekly cleansing almost. Like, it doesn't matter what the fuck's going on in my life. If I can, like, successfully sit down for at least one movie a week and be entertained or, like, taken away on a horror journey that, like, makes me want to continue to be a filmmaker, then, hey, it's a good fucking week. And this week, it did it again. But it's a completely different reason. And this is, again, what makes me more excited about being a filmmaker, too. Because, like, just being a fan of the people that make films, too. And fucking A, man.
Fucking A, man. Well, everybody, we are, our YouTube page is, we're putting up the old episodes on YouTube before Josh gets us our overlay so we can record.
Fuck. Leave
Josh
it
is busy
me.
Ass.
Ooh.
So, no, I'll harass you this week. I'll send you messages. You're a busy boy, though. So if you're not, like, all about podcasts, like, feeds, and you're interested in YouTube, you just look for us on YouTube, because we don't have a real URL for a while. We have to get up to 100 subscribers when we're at, like, 15 or something like that. But there's a lot of people interacting, so that was cool. Murdermoose.com. Our podcast, our Twitter is Moose Murder Pod on Twitter, I think it is. And our email is murdermoosepodcast@gmail.com. So if you want to email us and, you know, say something nice or ask for a movie or something like that, you can do that.
Or leave us more messages on our website that is, like, more than one word or an advertisement.
That's not a bot. So be a human. And, or if you are a bot, be like Vision and have a heart. And have a soul.
So was that like there's never going to be a show again? Like, that was the series finale. It was just to, like, bloop, little mini series.
They said never count out anything, but I think they kind of told the story they wanted to do with that. And I think that they can't say anything because Wanda is going to be a pretty central character in the Phase 4 movies of Marvel.
Right.
So maybe they'll do some more, depending. So, okay, Josh, I love your face, and I had a blast doing this. It's interesting. I feel like we end up talking longer about these, like, movies that aren't perfect because there's a lot to discuss, and it's interesting to see. And, like, I like to just, like, theorize what I saw and what I believed, and I love hearing what you saw and believed too. So
I'm always more from the technical side of things and how, like, that's what I'll always dive into, like, my downfalls of the movie or if I can see or feel the glue type thing, right? It's not like the gags or anything in this were bad. It was just, we needed more on the back end, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yep. Okay, everybody. Well, thank you for listening. We love you all. Murder Moose, Murder Moose, Murder Moose. And we'll catch you guys next week with Old Boy. Bye.
Bye.